Can you guys hear me back there? Okay. Can everybody hear me okay? Okay. If at some point you can't hear me, what's that?
I think you're up
here. Oh, good. If at some point you can't hear me and you'd like to, raise your hand. So good morning. Welcome to Zen Center. For those of you who are new, and welcome to Zen Center for those of you who aren't. So we have a Zen Buddhist initiation ceremony coming up here at MZMC in a few months for about 15-ish people, 12, 14-ish, somewhere in there, for some MZMC members who have decided to formalize their relationship with Buddhist practice by taking the refuges and the precepts in a traditional Zen initiation ceremony. It's also open to the public, I should mention, and I highly recommend it. If you've never seen high Zen ceremony, come. It's beautiful. It's just beautiful. Ice. Thank you, whoever did ice. So like most ceremonies, the Zen initiation ceremony is designed to mark a moment of transformation. It is designed to help us express something fundamental about our lives. It's designed to be a serious moment. So today I'm going to be talking to you about serious moments. And I'm going to use as my jumping off point a poem called The Boiling Water by a contemporary poet, Kenneth Cook. I know those of you who are into poetry probably know this poet and certainly are familiar with this poem. It's highly regarded. This was introduced to me, this poem was introduced to me by Tim. He's used it in Dharma talks a couple of different times over the past several years. And when I looked it up, the poem itself is quite long. It's several pages long. It's a beautiful piece. But for the purposes of what we're going to do today, I'm going to give you kind of a very edited version. As I said, I'm just using this as a jumping off place for what I want to explore. So some of you have programs, and the first little bit is on the front of your program, and some of you got full page copies of, again, an edited version of the poem. But I'm going to read, for those of you who did not get a handout, I'm going to read the first about half page of it, just so we're kind of on the same page here. So again, this is by Kenneth Cook, and it's called The Boiling Water. A serious moment for the water is when it boils, and though one usually regards it as merely a convenience to have the boiling water available for bath or a table, occasionally there is someone around who understands the importance of this moment for the water, maybe a saint, maybe a poet. The water is serious because it is boiling. This is what I think one should see. From this may come compassion. How often I have thought of seriousness, and how little I have understood it, except this: it has to do with change. Fainting is one sign of seriousness. Crying is another. A serious moment for the telephone is when it rings. A serious moment for the fly is when it lifts its wings. And a serious moment for the duck is when it swims, when it first touches water, then spreads its smile upon the water. Its feet begin to paddle. It is in and above the water, pushing itself forward, a duck. And a serious moment for the sky is when completely blue it feels some clouds coming. Another when it turns dark. A serious moment for the match is when it bursts into flame and is all alone, living in that instant, that beautiful second for which it was made. So much went into it. The men at the match factory, the mood of the public, the sand covering the barn. So it was hard to find the phosphorus, and now this flame, this pink, white, ecstatic, light blue. Serious. All our life serious. And we see around us seriousness for other things that touch us and seem as if they might be giving clues. A serious moment for this poem will be when it ends. So, it's interesting, isn't it? Already there's interesting ideas being explored here in this. And I'll start by kind of defining our terms, or at least the way I'm going to use them today. The word serious doesn't necessarily mean the opposite of funny. We're not using serious that way. We're not meaning serious as a synonym for heavy or somber or humorless. It could be. Seriousness can show up that way. But it doesn't necessarily have to in this context. A good example of this might be play for a kid. As you know, kids take play very seriously, even if it's absurd and hilarious. They're taking that activity very seriously. Does that give you a taste of how we're kind of using the word? We're sort of using the word today, serious, to mean unique, to mean personal, to mean important. Important. Right? It's an important moment for the water when it boils. So, like ceremonial moments, serious moments express something fundamental about our lives. A serious moment expresses something fundamental about who we are. And of course, in Zen, and in reality, every moment is serious. Right? You knew I was going to go there. Ta-da! Every moment is serious, right? Because every moment is personal. Every moment is unique. Every moment is important. If you can find me an unimportant moment, I would love to see it. And what this is beginning to show us is probably how much of our life we regard as unimportant. When we're reminded of the truth that every moment contains change, every moment contains something personal, every moment contains transformation, we start to realize how many of our moments we want to skip over, not be present to, fast forward. This is an unimportant one, I want to get to the important one. So just sort of sit with that for just a second, just the idea that all of your moments are important. How does it feel to think of all of your moments as important? How does it feel to think that in your entire life, in your whole life, you need never endure even one unimportant or insignificant moment? You are assigned exactly zero of them. It's an interesting feeling, isn't it? It's an interesting thought. I think part of us believes it, and part of us immediately doesn't. It's sort of overwhelming to think of every moment as containing the possibility of something important. I think we're so used to an important moment meaning a rare one. Important as in contrast to unimportant. What happened to you today? Not much. It was Tuesday. An unimportant day. Right? 24 hours of consciousness, changing experience, arising thoughts, feelings, memories, hopes, dreams, impulses, sensations, loves, joys, aversion and attachment. sunrise and sunset. Boring. I'm a human. I'm used to it. I can skip over that one. It's interesting to me that one of the things that Kenneth Cook says is, the water is serious because it is boiling. This is what one should see. From this may come compassion. That's interesting, isn't it? There's an equivalency here being made between seriousness and compassion. In Zen, we talk a lot about compassion. In Mahayana Buddhism, we talk a lot about compassion. And one of the ways of framing that for today, at least in context of this piece, is closeness with. To recognize the water is in the middle of transforming itself is to allow it in, to allow ourselves to feel more connected to it, to not, as he says, regard it as merely a convenience to have boiling water available for bath or a table, but to allow the witnessing of something to come into us, to get closer to us. The serious moment for the water becomes a serious moment for us. Right? There's no separation now. Compassion. I am with that experience. I'm with that feeling. So oftentimes, being the humans that we are, and maybe even most times, we don't realize a moment is serious until it's past. Do you guys know that feeling? I mean, some moments when we're in the middle of them, we recognize this is a serious moment. This is an important moment. This is a transformational moment. But oftentimes, we only see it in retrospect. Like, oh, that was actually a big deal. I didn't know it at the time. So my example today is I recently had to have my companion of 20 years and 1 week, an orange tabby cat named Hobbs, put to sleep. That was a serious moment for me. But it also showed me that every time he leapt up onto the sofa to sit next to me was a serious moment. And at the time, I thought those moments were ordinary. They're unremarkable moments. They're unimportant moments. They're the skip-over moments because they happen all the time. They have no weight. I'm not letting them in. I'm not close to them. Does that make sense? And then when that relationship is gone or changed, we look back and go, oh, I was wrong. Every single one of those moments was important. Every single one of those moments was serious. Right? So joy can be serious because every one of those moments was joy. Right? The little purring being that decides it wants to be with you as opposed to separate from you, that's joy. We realize it in retrospect. The first time I walked into this building, into the back door, because we didn't used to use the front door, that was a serious moment that I did not know was a serious moment. I was here to buy a Zafu. We used to make them and sell them. And I was just running an errand. That's why I was here. I don't know about you guys, but I usually regard my errands as about the least serious, least important thing in the world. And if I could fast forward over them and just have them be done, I would do it. If I could snap my fingers and say, groceries, be in the cabinet. Car, be washed. Gas tank, be full. I would love to skip over those experiences because I don't normally think of them as important. They aren't serious. They have nothing for me. I'm trying to get something out of my experience, and these are the ones that are trying to drain me. They're my enemy! Is that a little dramatic? It's kind of how it feels, though, right? The to-do list sometimes, you are my enemy. I'm just here running an errand. I'm buying a cushion. I did not know, of course, the moment of walking in the back door of 3343 East Calhoun Parkway was transforming my life entirely. There's an old saying, childhood is wasted on the young. That's kind of what this is about, right? Like when you're an adult, you look back and go, oh man, you're right in the middle of it. You don't know it. But God, if I could go back and just have one normal, average day of being a kid, you know, and playing in the sandbox, and deciding that sand would feel great down my shirt, and putting macaroni and cheese up my nose, because, well, why not? what would I give to feel that way again, you know? This is just the saying, childhood is wasted on the young, kind of recognizes the clarity of our hindsight, how clearly we see it when we're 20, 30, 40, 50, you know? When we're in the middle of it, we don't see it. So when we are serious, the way we're using that word today, we are deeply present. That's what we're talking about. When I notice that the boiling water is a big deal for the water, I have to be present to it. I have to include it in the sphere of my experience. I can't hold it at arm's length. We are seeing deeply. When we look at a piece of paper seriously, we can start to see the tree that it came from, right? The soil the tree grew in, the sun, the rain that had to be there in order for this piece of paper. I start to look so deeply into this. I understand that for the paper, a serious moment is being written on, printed on, folded perhaps, held. And we have in us, this is the promise of Zen practice, that we have in all of us the potential for the kind of awareness that brings things to life. The kind of awareness that helps us realize this whole thing is alive. There is no separation. There is no separation. That's the kind of awareness we're invited into doing. So, for those of you who are just here, for the previous 40 minutes sitting Zazen, I would say Zazen is always a serious moment. It's always an important moment. It's always unique. It's always personal. The whole point is to see it as such. The whole point of Zazen is to notice when you're wanting to skip over and wander and fill in and entertain yourself or whatever, and to actually put that agenda down and come back to, no, this is serious. What does the breath actually feel like right now? I've never taken this breath before, ever. I get one shot. How many times have I looked at this floor? I've never actually seen it before. This is my first chance. It's my last chance. Here it is. If I see this as less than vibrant, less than awake, that's on me. It isn't that the floor has become boring. It's that I'm not paying enough attention. Right? The onus is on us in this practice. And what a fantastic invitation that is. When our teachers say, you get to do this. You can do this. You've proven to yourself you can do this. You've had lots of serious moments in your lives when the world just woke up and it was because of you. You get to do that. You can do that. And here's how you do it. Not only do they promise you can, but they give you really specific instructions. Here's how you sit Zazen. Here's what you do with your legs. Here's what you do with your back. Here's what you do with your eyes. And you can do it every single day. Here's where you get cushions. I mean, they do everything but set the timer for you. This is how you get to do this. You can make your life more awake. So, serious is a choice. Serious is a choice that we make with our own awareness. And when we choose to not be serious, we are choosing to exclude, we're choosing to separate. And we do this a lot. We do this a lot. When you notice yourself doing it, please don't judge yourself. That's extra. Now you're not including the way things actually are. Please include that in your awareness too. So in our poem, Kenneth Cook says, seriousness has to do with change. That's interesting. He recognizes the seriousness of the moment of boiling for the water because it's changing, right? And I went, oh, this is great fuel for a Dharma talk because one of the great initial foundational truth teachings of Buddhism is that everything is change. That's what everything is. I'm using my words there carefully. Everything isn't changing. Everything is change. To say everything is changing implies a static thing that is undergoing a transformation, and we're just saying there's only transformation. There isn't a static thing to start with. There is just change. So things that are transforming or are in the midst of more rapid change have a way of grabbing our attention. I'm not sure why that is, but they have an energy about them. Things in active transformation have an energy about them. And they tend, if we're paying attention anyway, to grab our attention. So boiling water is a good example. The flowers being more open than they were yesterday. Kids growing when they have one of those growth spurts, you know, and you put the little mark on the door frame above their head and then you look at how far away it was from the last mark from 6 months ago or a year ago. Holy cow. That grabs our attention when you haven't seen your nephew for 9 months and you're like, oh my God, you're growing like a weed. That's what we'd say in my family. You're growing like a weed. I'm not sure about that saying, actually, but anyway. Grabs our attention. Weather changing. The people in our lives have a way of arresting our attention when they are in the middle of something transformative. When your friend arrives and they're crying, you know something's happening. They're changing. Something. They're boiling. They're having a serious moment. When you answer the phone and the person on the other end is laughing, something's changing, right? They're laughing. They're boiling. It's a serious moment for them, you know. Your kid starts to scream, right? They're boiling. Something serious is happening. It grabs our attention. Things that show us their impermanence tend to grab our attention. The reason it's hard to be present to the floor is because its change, from my perspective, seems so slow, it's easy to forget that it's change. It's easy for me to think it's static and that this really is the same floor that I saw yesterday and the day before. But when things are changing more rapidly, their impermanence is more obvious, our attention is a little more arrested. So like clouds, one of the reasons it's fun to watch clouds, because they're just, you know how like the more closely you look at a cloud, the more you realize there's like not one piece of it that's staying. It's all movement. It's very, it's fascinating for us. Campfires are like that. Fireworks are like that. Watching waves on the shore is like that, because it's transformation and it's happening rapidly. And so there's an urgency almost about that change that grabs our attention. I think that comes from the fact that they're vanishing as we watch them. I think we see their seriousness. I think we see their earnestness. When we watch waves disappearing on the shore, we see, kind of in what we would think of as real time, their wholehearted participation in their own vanishing. How earnestly they give themselves to their life and death. You know, if you sit by the shore of the lake, you can watch a wave be born, live, and die in the course of 5 seconds, you know. Holding no part of itself back, clinging to nothing, just pouring itself into the creation, the life, and the giving itself away. It's probably why we like to watch that kind of stuff. We tend to enjoy watching waves and fireworks and clouds and fire, campfire. There's something about that that's sort of almost trance-inducing, to watch something offer itself so completely. It's what we do in the cushion. During Zazen, right, we give ourselves away so completely. You hold nothing back, give it all away. We're like fire. We're like a cloud. We're like waves during Zazen. So William Irvine says, by contemplating the impermanence of everything in the world, we are forced to recognize that every time we do something could be the last time we do it. And this recognition can invest the things we do with a significance and an intensity that would otherwise be absent. We will no longer sleepwalk through our life. That's pretty good. I like that a lot. The only tweak there I would have for William Irvine, forgive me, sir, we are forced to recognize every time we do something could be the last time. I would say every time you do something is the last time. You cannot tie your shoes twice. Can't. It's different. You're different. Shoes are different. World's different. You're in a different breath. Different. Every time you do something is the first time and the last time. So, for those 15, 12, however many there are, initiates this fall, and of course for all of us, a commitment to live seriously means we can't just live a shell of our life. We can't keep it at a distance. And when we find ourselves keeping it at a distance, we stop doing that. Again, that's basically Zazen, right? I'm watching myself hold my experience at a distance because I'm escaping into a storyline, or I'm entertaining myself, or I'm criticizing. I'm holding my life at a distance. And so my agreement for these 40 minutes is when I notice that, I stop, and I let it back in again. And I don't hold it at a distance. I feel my breath. I feel my posture. I see the floor for the very first time. I let it back in again. And it's hard for us because I honestly think we oftentimes don't like actual life. The invitations to live our actual life, and we actually don't like it a lot of the time. Like I said, the list of errands, we don't like the list of errands. We don't want to think that there's an opportunity for awakening in my list of errands. I want my opportunity for awakening to come at Zen Center in a beautiful Zendo where it's properly supposed to be. And then when that's done, I can go back to living the unimportant moments of my life, which is running to the co-op to get groceries. And part of the reason I think we sometimes have an issue with actual life is because we don't understand it with our all-important brains. We actually don't understand it. We have ideas, we have plenty of those, but we actually don't understand moment-to-moment experience with our brains. I think we oftentimes don't like actual intimate experience because it's inconvenient. It does not play by the rules. We would like it to. We oftentimes don't like it because it hurts. It's one of the reasons we run away during Zazen, right? The more my back hurts, the quicker I am to escape into a story. Or certainly the quicker I am to escape into criticism. Not doing it right. Cushion should be higher, cushion should be lower. Why does my back still hurt after all these years? I don't know, maybe I'll think of somebody to blame. Darla should ring the bell sooner. Why did Tim let me get in myself into this anyway? I thought he was supposed to be compassionate. My back hurts. Anyway, I think we oftentimes don't like living our actual serious life because it's alive. And alive means dynamic, and it means unpredictable, and it means vivid, and it means breathtaking. And usually I don't think we like having our breath taken away. I think we like to be breath-keeping, actually. We want to hang on to our experience. We want to control it. I'm not sure why we do that. Maybe we, I don't know, think we can live forever if we could control things or something. I'm not sure. But our actual life, the landscape of our actual experience, is always arising and falling and being born and dying moment after moment. And it's ceaseless transformation. And I think when we really experience that, we can get scared. Not always. But honestly, I think teachings about impermanence are cool, and our brain kind of goes, yeah, I agree with that. Everything's changing. Yeah, groovy, I get that. And I think when we actually experience the arising and the vanishing of experience and realize there is no still center that I can find, I can notice experience, but you know, I can't find a me at the center of it that's abiding, we get scared. Naturally, we get scared. Pretty human response to constant change. Considering how much of my life I'm invested in trying to create static, fixed, secure things that I can rely on, to learn that all that stuff is vanishing and there's not a darn thing I can do about it is going to touch something pretty deep in me. It's not unusual at all for people to be kind of have a fear response to that. So there's a lovely poem about transformation from my friend Rumi that might help with our fear if this is something that you experience. He says, I spent millions of years in the world of inorganic things, as a star, as a rock. Then I died and became a plant, forgetting my former existence because of its otherness. Then I died and became an animal, forgetting my life as a plant, except for inclinations of the season of spring and sweet herbs, like the inclination of babes toward their mother's breast. Then I died and became a human. My intelligence ripened, awakening from greed and self-seeking to become wise and knowing. I behold 100,000 intelligences, most marvelous, and I remember my former states and inclinations. And when I die again, I will soar past the angels to places I cannot imagine. Now what have I ever lost by dying? That's pretty cool. What have I ever lost by dying? Of course, we're scared to death of it. We're scared to death of the death of even this moment. Some part of us wants to hang on to it. Even when it's miserable, I still actually want to hang on to it because it's known and it's familiar. There's still some fear there in watching it all go away, go away, go away, go away. The seriousness of that. And then when I ponder the death of this thing, this me, then I really get freaked out, right? And I like the way he frames that. What have I ever lost? Including more, getting bigger. And the boiling water from our poem is kind of a death and rebirth. It's a transformation, just like our lives. So it's serious, but it's also okay. It's also no big deal because it's your regular life. It's what you're doing right now. Right? It's just your regular life. So I'm going to talk about what I think are the four elements of boiling water, and I'm going to equate them to practice, and then I'm going to be done. I'm a great fan of lists, so I've chosen the right religion. Buddhism is very, very fond of lists. We have lists of lists. We have lists of lists of lists. We have books of lists of lists. I'm telling you, if you're a J, you've come to the right place. So I've decided that the four elements of the boiling water are the kettle, the fire, the water, and the steam. You can probably think of other things, but that's what I came up with. So the kettle, the fire, the water, and the steam. And the way I correspond these to practice is that the kettle, the tea kettle there, is the container. Right? That's our zazen. That's our zazen. That's our posture. That's our mudra. That's our crossed legs. That's the zafu, the zabutan, by extension, MZMC. The tradition, our teachers, the altar, the candles, the things that support this. This is the container. The container, right? You know, when you pour water into a container, it obviously takes the shape of the container. Right? We pour it into a round container, water is round. Pour it into a square container, water is square. It's interesting we do the same thing here. I think. I pour myself into the very same posture that people in this tradition have been doing for 1,200, 1,500 years, with a very, very similar altar, very, very similar room. I'm pouring, I'm allowing myself, my normal, what I think of as individual self, to be poured into a container, and I take the shape of that container. It's interesting to me. When I was here the first few years, some part of my sort of stubborn individualism really resisted that. This is stupid. I'm not Japanese. Why would I do this? Over time, my resistance started to soften because I realized how helpful it was to leave that part of me at the door and to pour myself into a container. I can pick myself up when I leave, no problem. I can go back to being cranky and stubborn, getting my way all day. That's great. I also know how much happiness that brings me. Right? There's something really fabulous for me personally about pouring myself into a container that's already made. For me, that's been made by my teacher and his teacher and their teacher, their teacher, their teacher, going back and back and back. A container that has been cared for and loved and transmitted so carefully that I can trust it. I can trust myself to pour, to be poured into it. I don't have to worry that I'm not safe. I don't have to worry that I'm not going to be held by it. There are generations and generations and generations of people who have been in this same container. There's something really beautiful about that. For me, I love that. So the form. This is a container. The fire is that energy that we need, right? That's our energy. The energy it takes to transform something. This is our discipline. This is our effort. This is our diligence. This is the part of you that gets yourself to the zafu the days you don't want to do it. And the part of you that stays on the zafu because the timer hasn't gone off yet when you really don't want to be there. And you do it anyway. It's the part of you that's on the third day of the retreat and you're pretty much positive if you do one more period of zazen, you will die. You will die. The ambulances will be there. They will cart you away. Your relatives will wonder, wow, she actually died facing the wall. Weird. Didn't think it could actually kill somebody, but you're positive. And yet, you hear the han, and you make your way to the zendo anyway. It takes effort, right? It takes a lot of heat. I drink a lot of tea. I love tea. And every time I put that kettle on, I watch myself think, wouldn't it be cool if I could just snap my fingers and have boiling water? And, of course, we have all these devices now, you know, electric kettles and stuff that boil it all the faster, 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 you know, because we don't like to wait. But I just have an old stove, and I put the flame under it, and even at its highest setting, you've got to wait quite a while for this little amount of water to start to transform. It takes a lot of energy, right? It takes a lot of fire for a long time to start to move that water. And this practice takes a lot of discipline. This is the fire of our awareness. This is the fire of our diligence and our practice. It takes a lot of energy to change old patterns. It takes a lot of energy to move things that are stuck. Isn't it? And you, do you find yourself doing the same thing over and over, even though you've been working on it for 5 years or 10 years? Lest I sound too discouraging, I also want to say that the opposite is also true. For a lot of folks, even if they're new to meditation, they experience their time on the cushion almost immediately as at least a little bit liberating, a little bit freeing, a little bit lighter after each sitting. They just feel better. Just taking the posture makes them feel better. So please don't make this, don't hear me as saying this is years away, and if you stick with this every day in this thankless dark tunnel, you'll someday experience. No, that's not what we're doing. It's both. It takes sustained discipline over the course of many years, but it's also right now. It's also right now. The container, the fire, the mind, and what we become is now. I'm talking about them like they're separate and like they're sequential because I think it's helpful. But just remind yourself that they're not separate, that it's now. So it's the energy. The fire is the energy. The water for me was that which is transformed. The water is what's going to boil. The water is what's going to turn into steam. The water is going to go from something dense and still to something vibrant and light, lighter than air and moving. It's going from dense to light, enlightening, right? This is what's changed. This is our mind. This is our heart. This is our awareness itself. This is the thing we call us. This is what we're putting over the fire, aren't we? In Zazen, isn't that what's being tempered there? Isn't that what's being transformed? Isn't that what's being changed? It's a dead giveaway you're doing this practice correctly, well, sincerely. If after you've been doing it for a number of months, you just tend to notice you feel a little lighter. It tends to show up in being a little more open-hearted, a little slower to anger, denser emotions, right? We tend to spend less time with them. A little more easygoing, maybe. Quicker to recognize the old pattern and its pull. It tends to show up as some variation on joy. And that doesn't necessarily mean running down the street screaming joy. It could be that very subtle, serious joy of just recognizing the closeness of the floor or the sound of the fan. But it shows up. And that is the hallmark, I think. I think that's the hallmark of the transformation. More moments of gratitude. Just being happy to be here. Even when it is too hot. Even when the bill isn't paid. Even when the kid is screaming. More moments of humility, more moments of gratitude. Moments of connection. Moments of connection. So finally, steam, right? Our fourth component. This is what we're moving toward. It's what we already are. The steam is what we become. We begin to let go of our denseness. We give it away back into the air. We start to let go of what we think we are. And we start to grow into everything we forgot we could be. When water's in a kettle, it forgets. You can be lighter than air. You can move. It's forgotten that. It's dense. It's not moving. We forget, don't we? We need to be reminded of our potential for transformation. Zen is all about promising the potential for human transformation is so much greater than what we think it is. It's very, very easy for us to underestimate the amount of change we can actually make in ourselves and in the world, right? It's so easy for us to underestimate it. The pattern seems so ingrained. The energy seems so dense. Things appear to be so slow in changing. Remind yourself. Give yourself support. Give yourself encouragement. Give yourself whatever it is you need to stick with it. Because it is transformation. And the lovely thing about this metaphor, I'm just using this boiling water metaphor today, is that we know water vapor and the water in the pan and the ice cubes in the fridge are the same thing. They're not different. It's H2O, right? Whether you're frozen or whether you're at least taking the shape of the kettle or you're flying free in the air, it's the same water. It's the same water. In Soto Zen, we say aspiration, practice, Enlightenment and nirvana are not different things. They are not sequential. They are not separate. It's one thing happening. Your practice is that thing. Right? Even pouring yourself into the kettle is your boiling. If that's only an attractive intellectual idea and that's the closest you can get, fine. Grab onto it. But don't suspect you won't experience it, because you will. We always talk about the path being a circle in Soto Zen. The path being a circle, the path being a circle, the path being a circle. It isn't water bad, steam good. It's water, water, water in all of its states. Frozen, fine. In kettle, fine. Steam, fine. Right? Water. We are the same. This awareness that you already have is what we're working with. So it isn't that it's going from corrupted to non-corrupted or bad to good or any of that stuff. We're just... awakeness is what seeks awakeness. Wisdom is what seeks wisdom. The thing that brings you to the cushion, there. Do you lack it? Of course not. You wouldn't be here. You have it. Of course you do. So, that's what we're here to talk about. We all want serious moments. We want personal moments. We want important moments. We are promised that every moment is important. We are promised that we are always in the midst of transformation. We are promised that our transformation can lead us to greater freedom, greater expansiveness, greater compassion, greater wisdom. And how we do this is by just practicing the discipline of Zazen. Coming to the Zen Center, pulling out your cushion when you're at home, sitting in the parking lot for 5 minutes and just catching your breath before you jump into the meaning. You know, find that part of yourself that's already always still. You don't have to feel like you're a victim of life and it pulls away from you and you're chasing after it. You don't need to do that. It's the discipline of just noticing that the fundamental nature of your attention is kind. Just kind attention. It's all that is. That's all Zazen is kind attention, right? When I'm distracted from kind attention, I return to kind intention. Kind attention is just what includes. That's what I mean by kind, right? Includes. I see you boredom. I see you sweaty. I see you back hurt. Okay. Hello. There you are. I'm not going to feed you, but I'll give you tea. I'm kind. That's all the type of awareness Zazen cultivates, and that's really all we're asked to do in this building. That's all we're asked to do in this tradition. And that's what those initiates are going to do this fall, is to just promise to try to pay attention and be kind. That's really it. I promise this, I'm going to try as hard as I can to pay attention and to be kind to what shows up. That's my boiling water. That's how I make this moment into a serious moment, an important moment, a joyous moment, right? That's how we recognize our life. That's how we recognize non-separation. Our fundamental non-separation, that's how we recognize it. It's just by being kind. I include you. I see that you're not different. That kind of awareness, kind attention, just brings everything to life. It gives everything importance. It includes everything. It rejects nothing. And every moment contains the possibility of that kind of awareness. It is the fundamental nature of your awareness already. And that makes every moment... a serious moment, right? The possibility of a serious moment is right here. Isn't that cool? This could be your boiling water moment. This is your boiling water moment. Can you be present to it with kindness? Can you look deeply enough into it to see yourself there? Can you love it? That's really all our practice is. That's really all our life is. And that's all I've got for you today. So thank you very much. We still have a few minutes. We have some time for questions, comments, or other poems related to water boiling. Benton, please.
An addendum to your lists.
Yes.
We also have a list of books here.
We have a list of books here. And many of the books themselves contain lists. We have lists of books with lists. Benton's a librarian, so he's got kind of a book lens. Thank you very much. What else?
This last couple of weeks, I had a leak flooding my basement. I as a result, I've been clearing out all that stuff. And a lot of it goes back many years.
Yeah.
And that whole editing process is one serious moment after another. And it's quite heavy.
Yeah.
And I think it's good for you to say, be kind in those moments. Be kind to yourself. Because that's where I got to this morning. I thought, Barbara, of course this is difficult. I mean, you're looking at your whole life almost. As you look through your financial, you know, papers, work that I used to do, creative things that I did. And it's an interesting thing. I mean, I just thank you for your talk. It was right on for me this morning. I just wanted to say that.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. The self-kindness is so... It's almost counterintuitive to us. It seems like for so many of us that it's hard to get to. You'd think it'd be the first thing. You'd think we'd be really, really... Because we're at the star of the show. You'd think we'd be just... And for some reason, it takes a lot of practice, doesn't it? I'm really with you. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Ashley.
Do you think we like to control our moments instead of letting the moments like happen? I always think of like the extreme sports people and they're like,
yeah,
I'm just living the moment, but really you're just controlling your moment.
We love to control, without a doubt. Yeah. She said, do you think that we would prefer to control our moments rather than let them... Is that an accurate... Rather than let them happen, without a doubt. Yeah. Fear, right? It just comes from that place of fear of, like, control means, you know, control. Like, I'm still in charge. I totally agree with you. I think that's actually part of why the relinquishment of control, whether it's our choice or not our choice, brings up such a powerful fear response in us. Strangely, it can also bring up ecstasy and joy. And it just depends on the container in which that happens, right? Because some of our moments that we don't control, we experience as exhilarating and freeing, right? I mean, in a way, an enlightenment experience is that kind of like, I'm not there anymore to control anything, and I experience it as spacious freedom. Other folks can have a very similar experience, even on the cushion, and start going, oh my God, I started vanishing and that's not cool. I definitely need to be here. So it's control. Without a doubt, Ashley, thank you. I completely agree. Does that make sense to you guys? Do you notice that too? Yeah. I think there's like two kinds of people, like the I like surprise party people and the I don't like surprise party people. Maybe that's an example of, oh, being out of control is kind of fun. It's like being on roller skates all the time. Woo! And other people are like, oh dear God. If I come home and there's 20 people in my house I did not expect, I just run for the hills. Jason.
Something I hear that I still struggle with is Zen Buddhist practice is hearing the passivity in that, not trying to control.
Yeah.
Trying to have that passionate action in my life.
Yep.
And I see a struggle there. And I've now talked with that with you and other teachers and other... Well, that's, it seems like you're early in this practice, seeing that you can, that it doesn't mean just sitting and letting the world happen to you, but more than that.
So yeah. Thank you. I will. There's a lot, of course, that could be said about that, and you make a great point. This morning, did you guys hear that? It's the relationship between allowing passivity and action. When we take action. So just to sort of tie in with our theme, I would say first is to recognize that taking action is serious. Just to recognize that the desire to take action is a serious moment, and the action I'm going to take is a serious action, in that it is, again, unique, personal, and important. Unique is especially important because we tend to think that the circumstance that's coming up now that demands an action is probably the same as the circumstance that came up before that demanded an action, and what worked then will work now. And sometimes that's true, and sometimes it's not. So seeing our patterns, I think, is really important. And the second thing I'll say ties in with Ashley's question, I think, really, really well, which is one of the things I love about the serious moment of Zazen is watching the persistent and tenacious desire for control arise over and over and over and over and over. It's one of the reasons Zazen is difficult, because we're choosing to relinquish control. I'm going to take the posture, align my spine, set the timer, and then I relinquish control over my experience. I just connect to my experience, right? I'm just going to allow it. So bored is bored. Angry is angry. Sad is sad. Happy is happy. That's really hard for us. Really, really hard for us. And when our action, our desire to do something, to make a change, and the world comes from our desire to control, that's not good. That's difficult. If it comes from our desire to connect, that's something else entirely. And it's subtle. And actually, there are those... I've actually worked with this theme a lot over many years. I can't go down this rabbit hole. I don't have enough time, but I lead frequent pilgrimages to South Africa to work on race and sacred activism. And one of the things we do is, where is the thing you're about to do coming from in you? If it's a desire to control, don't do it. You think you know better. That's dangerous. Isn't it? If it's out of a desire to connect, that's in something else entirely. Entirely different. And I honestly think that's one of the most skillful ways we can begin to discern our inner agenda and really start to feel it is zazen, because there's no agenda. Just to notice. We get really, really, really good at fine-tuning and knowing, where is this impulse in me coming from? Is this just my neurosis? Is this my desire for control? Is this about, right, my stringent set of beliefs, the way things ought to be? There's something constricted around that, and I can actually feel it. We get to the point we can feel it in our bodies, can't we? We know what it's like to be angry. It's about control. We can feel it in our bodies, can't we? Whereas connection comes from something else entirely. Even when it's painful, it comes from a different experience. So, to me, they're hand in glove. And I completely get where your question's coming from. If I were you, I'd keep pulling at that thread. Keep asking that question. Keep exploring it. It's honestly just never occurred to me that Zen would be passive. It's like, no, because Zazen is such an active thing. Right? Aren't you moment to moment? I see you. I'm letting you go. I'm coming back to this. Oh, I see you. I'm letting you go. I'm like, this is active, active, active. Right? This is stillness in activity. And I think when our actions come from that stillness, that desire to connect, we can do tremendous good. We can do tremendous transformation. And when it comes from someplace in us that's constricted, angry, scared, controlling, I'm just going to try to convert you to my way because I know better. Here's some blankets. Put on some clothes. Right? Aren't we good at that? I'm thinking of our American history. Anyway, thank you, Jason. And I know we're running out of time, so I thank you all for your attention and for your questions this morning. Thank you.